This is Bill Bushell, and you're listening to Graffiti. I was going to open the program tonight by saying that we're going to try to get back to some regular programming, to let some beauty back into our lives. But really, as long as this sword of Damocles hangs over our heads, all of our heads, there is no regular, no normal, no business as usual. But there is, I hope, room for some beauty. On a personal level, I have many friends living in Greece, and I can't help but think about them and the shadow of uncertainty that they live under. I send my love and my prayers out to you. And on that note, I'll begin tonight's graffiti with a reading, a short poem, 12 lines from Penelope Kara-George's brave and wonderful new collection of poems called The Neon Suitcase. The title of the poem I'm going to read is Tantalus. On the road to Argos, we stopped and asked a beggar for directions to a well. He wept and pointed to the dry ground, arid stones, and in the great distance, the beautiful, undrinkable sea. In the studio with me tonight is the person who wrote that wonderful poem. Hello, Penelope, and welcome back to Graffiti.
Thank you so much, Bill. It's wonderful to be here. And thank you for reading that poem. You make it sound better.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. But I do want to congratulate you on this wonderful new collection of poems that's published by Somerset Hall Press. And for those of you who want to know more about the book, I have a link on my blog to the publisher's page for the book. And again, my blog is billbushell.wordpress.com, where the title of it is Just My Eyes. Penelope, before we start talking about the poetry and your writing and everything, why don't you read a poem for us? How about real life?
Yes, I might preface it by saying that I grew up in Newburgh, New York, and I felt that I was taking all my lessons from life from the movies. That was my school. Real life. Betty Davis knew the art of smoking a cigarette, breathing celluloid fury, and how to lose with style, throwing away her lines like candy wrappers, indifferent to kitchen sinks and happy endings, struggling to survive one more day or keel over gloriously, dark victory, fade to black. Tragic or joyous, my heroines knew the big emotions. Growing up in movie houses, with girlfriends wadding Kleenex and weeping over Susan Hayward in my foolish heart, I buy a copy of Hayward's plaid taffeta dress and do a Lauren Bacall glide in pancake flat capizios. The skirt swings, and I'm ready for romance, climaxing in a cinematic burst, like a place in the sun when Liz Taylor visits Doom Montgomery Clifton Prison just before they walk him to the chair. Exuding hair tonic and teenage machismo, Buddy Anderson dances close and walks me home. On the doorstep, the music swells, and we embrace as my sister, inspired by Ingrid Bergman in Intermezzo, played Chopin on the living room piano. Aspiring not to make movies, but to live movies, post-college I moved to New York, city of skyscrapers and mirrored nightclubs. A hot, lonely Sunday afternoon in August, I seek the shelter of Lowe's 86th Street Theater. Actress Vivian Leigh, a fragile Blanche Dubois, reaches out for the kindness of strangers in a streetcar named Desire. In the dusty half-light, cold, damp fingers probe my thigh, violating me in hot-breathed anonymity. No Marlon Brando, but a slender, dark-suited predator. In the studio apartment with a pastel pink stove, I pull on my bathrobe. Suffering fallen heroines wear them in the daytime to cloak their vulnerability. Shirley MacLaine, The Apartment, why was it billed as a comedy? And brood on desolate desire, my yearning for a man's touch exposed to me by a sick, soft hand. Wanting to edit the scene, I know it will unreal for a lifetime. For who am I if not imagination informed by giant shadows, running and rerunning my own picture show?
You're listening to Graffiti on Hellenic Public Radio, Cosmos FM on WNYE, 91.5 FM and streaming live at cosmosfm.org. I'm Bill Bushell, and tonight I'm talking to Penelope Kara-George about her newest collection of poetry, The Neon Suitcase. I want to thank Penelope for being here tonight, and also I wanted to mention that this book was published by Somerset Hall Press, and I want to thank Dean Papadimitriou for being the head of that organization. It's a really wonderful publisher, and they've published some of my favorite books, including Pomegranate Siege, which is a great collection of poems by Greek and Greek-American poets. Penelope, I mentioned in the beginning that this is a wonderful and brave book of poems, and I feel that the poem you just read, Real Life, real as an R-E-E-L. I think people probably caught that from the poem. I feel that this is an example of that bravery, because even if this poem is not a personal poem, but I think it is, it's going to be perceived as much. And I think many of the readers would probably think that you've revealed quite a bit here.
I think that, yes, I have. I wouldn't call it confessional exactly. But my favorite poets are Anne Sexton, absolutely one of my all-time favorites. Of course, she ended up, I can't remember exactly how she killed herself, but she wrote extremely wonderful, vivid poetry about her life. And, of course, Emily Dickinson, who is also one of my role models.
Mm-hmm.
I love her poetry. And it was all of her life, her feelings. And I thank you, Bill, for calling it brave. I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but I think poetry almost has to be personal, or it's not a poem.
Yeah, I can understand that. I know a lot of my poetry is personal, and like you, I tend to be a narrative poet, and I started out as a storyteller. So for me, poetry is another way of telling a story, and sometimes, more often than not, it is personal.
That's true. I think it's similar. These are short, very short stories. I find poetry so interesting. I was talking to someone. I said, the poems in this book, the few of them are instant poems. They just kind of pop onto the page. And another poem may take 20 years.
Yeah.
And I have both of those here. And, you know, the great thing about poetry is that it's a wonderful thing if you, as you travel around on the subway or on a boat or a plane, and you have your notebook, it's companion, reading it and writing it
right.
as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean about taking, well, no, I don't know about 20 years, but I've been working on this one poem for 3 years, and I haven't written a word yet. But I know what it's about. I know where it's going. I even know the title, but it just won't come. And it's not frustrating, but it's aggravating.
So that's a good poem because it's fermenting. It's waiting, you know?
Well, that's what I keep telling myself. I think we're going to go to another piece of music, and when we get back, I think I will read a poem. Okay, we're back. And I just wanted to remind everybody that the poetry that we're reading tonight is from Penelope Kara George's new book, which is called The Neon Suitcase. And she was kind enough to come into the studio tonight to read and talk about this wonderful collection. Before we move on, I'd like to hearken back to the poem that I opened the show with tonight, Tantalus. First, it almost seems that you were prescient when you wrote this, because in many ways, those 12 lines feel like a metaphor for what's happening in Greece today. Second, I don't know if I should praise you for this poem or be angry with you. Tantalus is one of the great cads in all of literature. For me, he ranks up there with Shakespeare's Richard III, as far as caddism goes. And yet, in this poem, you're comparing him to this very sorrowful old man standing on the side of a road. We feel pity and anguish. The character Tantalus carved up his son Pelops and served him to the gods as some sort of divine stew. Should we be praising this person, feeling sorrow for him? Or should we be repulsed and disgusted by Tantalus, which is what I think? Yet this is so painfully beautiful, these 12 lines. So tell me, where does Tantalus stand in your opinion?
Well, I think that he is so distorted and so suffering himself that we have to have empathy for him. I mean, he has achieved nothing except misery. And it's almost like these two guys that escaped from prison, and we hated them because they were so awful. And yet they were somehow, we did have empathy for them because they were locked up and they were making a break. And I think so many of us feel that way. We want to run if we can.
Yeah, but I don't know. Tantalus was such a bad guy. I'm not sure I can find too much redeeming value in him.
No, but grotesque. And the grotesques are fascinating.
Yes, yes. Well, it's funny because much like that three-year poem, Tantalus is always the story I've wanted to tell on air, and I haven't gotten it to it yet because I haven't figured out how to make it more than just an incident, make it a story. And that's something I've actually been working on for about 10 years. Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, the first thing you have to do is get it out of your head and onto a piece of paper.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and no matter how bad it is, then it'll be beautiful.
Okay, well, we got a note from the Limnos Society, and they're saying that they're proud of you and they want to say hi.
Oh, I'm thrilled, and I'm saying hi back. I love it. Thank you.
And you're headed to Greece soon, aren't you?
I certainly am. I'm headed for Limnos. August 1st. First going to Naxos. There's a poetry reading there. I've never been to Naxos. And a wonderful poet, Vasiliki Rapti, she teaches at Harvard. I read with her in Boston, and she has a theory that poetry is play. And so I will be joining her and some other people on Naxos. And then to Limnos.
I'm jealous.
Come along, Bill.
Put me in your neon suitcase. I think we're going to go to another piece of music, and then we'll come back and we'll read some more.
Param, 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 γυρνάω χορεύω στην άμμο του χειμώνα με τα φύκια. Τη θάλασσα πρόστισε γιατρεύω και κάνω με τα αστέρια σκουλαρίκια. Παραμ, 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 παραμονεύει το πέραγο του φρόντου το καράβι. Μια άγκυρα η ζωή μου ζήτη ανέβει, το βάθος του ερωτά της να συλλάβει. Θάλασσα μανάρα μοίρα μου εσύ, γαλάζια μοίρα, μια παρά στον ώμο χρυσή τον ήλιο πήρα. Θάλασσα μνήμη μαύρου μου ασήμη, πάρ' την καρδιά μου και κάντη νησί του ανέμου ακρίμη. Θάλασσα μανάρα μοίρα μου εσύ, γαλάζια μοίρα, για παραμάνα στον ώμο χρυσή τον ήλιο πήρα.
You're listening to Graffiti on Hellenic Public Radio, Cosmos FM on WNYE 91.5 FM and streaming live at cosmosfm.org. I'm Bill Bushell, and tonight I'm talking to Penelope Karageorge about her new collection of poems called The Neon Suitcase. And Penelope suggested during the break that she read a poem about Limnos.
Yes, well, I was so happy to hear from the Limnians. And I go to Limnos almost every summer, and I go to my, what I still call my grandmother's house. But as a Greek American, there's always the fine line that I'm walking. Greek American. And the poem is Prisoner of Summer. Through the shutter slits, I survey the world like a captive. My view narrow, or am I the enemy aiming fire? Still they find me here, view me through the cracks, braless, breast drooping, alone in a blue-green dream, hearing birdsong, church bells, and Stavros next door banging pans, celebrating sorrow. Aegean prison island where every day I close the bars on myself. Clotheslines snap, cats take and wash, birds scream in the heat of twilight, oven world, inferno of Limnos. Tonight trees etch themselves into a Japanese print, reminding me of worlds outside. I come alone, no longer dreaming in the dark night, that primal dream of men singing in the square. Now the curtain falls. The barbarians are coming with the cement mixers and computers to repopulate. But I never belonged, only to the house, weeping in a white plastic chair, remembering my father and his pet lamb, slaughtered for an Easter feast. An early lesson in love. Careful, I speak to everyone and polite. Fear Athena or hope to encounter her in the old lady with her stick, her three questions, her pail, her witch's broom. Island of exile, of remoteness, of widows, of misfits, of schemers, of elders whose hearts burst with goodness. And yet, the whispers, the night talk as I'm leaving, and black eyes are on me. The land of green figs and anxiety, of nervous breakdown, and yet, the love.
I'm going to read one of Penelope's poems from The Neon Suitcase. It's called Lunching with Lola. Just when frivolities demanded, witty repartee glistening with well-voweled, lipsticked words, Why do I want to weep into the soup? Lunch out makes me solemn. This early century ritual, hot breathy metaphor for life with its beginning, middle, and end, all set on a tiny stage. And I play queen to queen, lunching with Lola. We crack the scripts. I break the ice. I've this yearning in me. I cry for white gloves, the Cuban hills, and love. At midday, beef stew fills me with despair. Lola's laughter splinters glass. "That's not it," says she, throwing her head back to deposit an olive pit in my plate. "Keep that in mind. The detritus of betrayal, your ex-husband's remarriage, sneakered feet and plath." I toss a roll and it bounces off her forehead. "Oof," says Lola, unamused. So many things happening, and not. Connections barely made over the menus, which wear maroon tassels, like a graduation cap or a chorus girl's bra. Rolling under the table, I drape cloth over my head until a waiter pulls me out by my feet, careful not to snag nylons. Seated again, transfused with ice water and potage du jour, I read portents in the breadbasket, observe spies at the next table. "Vanilla ice cream!" I shout its truth, classic as the Parthenon. A bearded ventriloquist attaches strings to my arms and moves them up and down. "Did I speak wrong?" "There's something on your chin," Lola says. The fish arrives without a head. I bend to kiss Lola's upper hand, but she retracts it. I squirm and twirl and bite. We pat our lips with cloth and touch our faces. Lola urges chocolate mousse and forks me. Blood trickles. She'll pay. Next time, I treat.
That's great.
I love this poem. There's so much in it. First of all, I have to ask you, does this have anything to do with Lola the Kink song?
No, it has nothing to do at all. But it's interesting. Lola is... I mean, there was a real person. I've changed her name.
to protect the non-innocent.
But this won first prize in a literal latte poetry contest to write about food.
Oh, wow.
And it's in their anthology, Best of the First 15 Years of Literal Latte.
Wow.
So it was one of those poems that came very easily. But I do feel that way about lunch. I really think that, you know, lunch takes all day. And usually, very often, lunch, whether it's a business or a pleasurable lunch, is a battleground.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because there's so much I like about this poem. First of all, I wanted to say that when I write, I tend to stay away from simile. But the one you have here, maroon tassels, like a graduation cap or a chorus girl's bra, I mean... You have to stay away from simile unless it is so unique, which this is. And that's one of the great things. The other thing is, this is one poem where there are parts of it that are almost better read silently, like the line, "She'll pay," because that has so many different meanings that I can't tell you how many times I read it differently. And... There was the part of me that wanted to really dig it in. "She'll pay," you know. But then I said, "No, you have to be light with this because it is so ambiguous and so many different meanings could be read into this that I wanted to read it almost totally bland so that the listener could make their own decision how to interpret it. The other part that I really liked was I bend to kiss Lola's upper hand. She has the upper hand in this. And, you know, the first few times I read it, I totally missed that. And then all of a sudden it was like, why did Penelope write upper hand? And then as soon as I said it you know, upper hand. It was like, oh, upper hand. Yeah, this is a great poem. I really liked it. And the dissonance of it also. I found it so hard to find a rhythm to this poem that I read it maybe 10, 15 times until I could find a rhythm to it. And even then, it was like those parenthetical expressions just sort of like blot out both ends, you know. Anyway, it's a great poem. We have to break in about 1 minute, which means we will be back after the news. I just wanted to remind everybody that you're listening to Graffiti on Hellenic Public Radio, Cosmos FM, on WNYE 91.5 FM in New York, and streaming live at cosmosfm.org. I'm Bill Bushell, and tonight I'm talking to the wonderful poet, the brave poet, Penelope Kara George, about her new collection of poetry, The Neon Suitcase. You're listening to Graffiti on Hellenic Public Radio, Cosmos FM on WNYE 91.5 FM and streaming live at cosmosfm.org. I'm Bill Bushell, and tonight I'm talking to Penelope Kara George about her newest collection of poetry, The Neon Suitcase. And since we only have a few minutes left, I'm going to have Penelope read another poem.
This poem is dedicated to romance, and we'd all like to be in love, but it's not always the case. The title is How Once Again I Was Frustrated and Wanting to Spill My Guts and Share Their Beauty. I'm always having these urges to meet some guy and tell him everything. Each horrible, beloved detail about myself. Just spill it all out, and he'll spill back, like with my ex-husband. Because today was our anniversary, the day the whole world opened big and shiny to me, and I thought, bliss, bliss, how we'll talk forever and be fantastically carnal, but exquisite and spiritual, kicking ass and laughing at the world, and how he would be everybody for me. And now, how I thought maybe it was you, and oh, so wanting to come closer and closer and really reveal. But once again, I had you wrong, and how you looked away, just a side glance, but you couldn't take it, didn't want to take it in your hands and hold it. All that stuff, all that tragic, bleeding joy, hope, desperation, love. So we'll be polite. And what's the point of all the talk, 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 talk? Is it really important? And did you like the movie?
Brava, brava. One of the other things that you're doing is you're hosting the Greek American Writers Association at Cornelia Street. Now, that's every other month?
Every other month, yes. And our next meeting will be in October.
October.
I think it's October 13th.
Okay.
It's the second Saturday of the month.
Yeah. If you out there listening have not been there, it is a fun way to spend a Saturday evening. I've been there a number of times, and I look forward to going back again. Another thing I wanted to ask you about was on the back cover, you have all these wonderful comments by various different people. And one of them is by Veronica Golos. Do you know Veronica?
I've met Veronica, and I'm a great admirer of hers. And she is actually Dean who sent her the manuscript. And we've gotten acquainted via email, and I went to one of her readings in New York. And she's very special.
Yeah, I think it's called Bell Buried Deep, is one of my favorite poems. It is so beautiful.
Beautiful.
And touching.
Oh, I did want to mention, too, mentioned the publisher. And the wonderful cover was done by a Greek-American, Kosmoyannis, because I thought it was difficult to translate the Neon Suitcase
He did a fantastic job.
Yes.
So I think there's enough time. I'm going to read another one of your poems, which I really like a lot, called Beyond the Taj Mahal. On the green train from Agra, Mary and Lou recite the rosary because it's Holy Thursday somewhere in the cosmos, and Jesus once held hands with Gandhi. Outside the window, fields unroll like Kansas as India wheels out her colors. Erotic red, desert brown, a yellow building with abandoned sign, aqua-painted slums festooned with laundry. Holding his head in his hands, a purple-shirted man weeps, then tethers his sacred cow near the railroad tracks. 10 men cram into a spangled tuk-tuk, speed down highways to the polluted Ganges to shave their heads and seek nirvana. Shiva Marble Company, all in white. The gods peddle goods to the new aristocrats, while India vomits sorrow, clad in gold saris. Once moguls scented their fountains with jasmine, but now the train station, the flagrant smell of urine. An urchin poses like Bollywood, all for 10 rupees. India holds its breath and tries not to hear the tigers of Ranthambore growling, hungry.
Thank you, Bill. That's wonderful.
I love that poem. We have about 2 minutes left. One of the things that interested me was in your introduction, you mentioned how you've been a lover of poetry since you were a very little girl when you first heard Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And I was wondering, have you ever used that image, which is such a powerful image, in any of your work?
Twinkle, Twinkle?
Well, the whole idea of being a child and hearing something like that and being immediately a lover of something.
I don't think I have. You're inspiring me. I do have a poem about childhood and this, you know, endless play. I was writing poetry as a little kid, but nobody was thinking about it because that's what you did.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, maybe that's what you did. I didn't do that.
Well, you are inspiring me. The Child's Garden of Verse. I love to read that. And,
right.
And the nuns were beating trees into us and, you know, memorizing. That was a good thing, to memorize poems. Early Emily Dickinson poems.
Well, it's funny because, it's one of the things that I rebelled against in school was forced memorization. It just drove me. And, you know, I'd always get bad marks in English because I would never do the memorization. It was my rebellion, you know. And now, today, I'm sort of sorry that I didn't memorize some of these things.
I think that I shall never see a poem as lovely as a tree.
It's interesting. That's one of my uncle's favorite poems. I really want to thank you for coming on. This has been so much fun. And the best of luck with this. It's such a wonderful collection. And I truly do feel, you know, it was very brave of you to write some of these poems because they are so personal.
Thank you, Bill. It's just been a wonderful hour. Okay, I appreciate everything.
That's it. See you soon. Kalinikta. May the eagles fly. Love you.